Blackout Radio, the voice of political conspiracy research. To call in, we have a secure line ready. Area code 604-525-4167. Again, just call area code 604-525-4167. You're listening to Black Op Radio, the show NSA doesn't want you to hear. And now your hosts, Anita Langley and Leno Sanner.
Good evening, this is Black Op Radio number 24. Len can't be with us today, but we have a guest with us who is going to fill up the void, no problem. Mr. Arthur Evangelista is a former FDA investigator, and he has a lot to say about how the FDA works. Arthur, are you there?
Yes, I am. Glad to be here, Anita. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, it's great to have you here. Perhaps you could start by giving us a little bit of background about yourself and how you came to be in the position you are now, where you're talking about the FDA and irregularities.
Well, it'll probably be an accident that'll never happen again. I was inducted into federal service, unbeknownst to me. I didn't realize I was working for the mob. Now, seriously, my law enforcement and medical background seemed to be a perfect combination of skills and knowledge that would have been useful for protecting the public health, working for the food as a federal investigator for the Food and Drug Administration. I was hired the day of the Chilean grape crisis in 1989 and worked for the agency for 3 years, 3.5 years, and did some interesting work for the FDA. While I was with the FDA, I was appointed as monitor or manager of two very health significant programs. One was chemicals and pesticide contaminants in foods, and the other program was for illegal drug tissue residues in animals for human consumption. And aside from that, we also had regulatory and consumer complaints that we had to investigate, tampering cases, and all of them also had regulatory and consumer complaints that we had to investigate, tampering cases, and all of this was combined into the general way the FDA functions. So you might have four or five investigators in a field office where I mostly worked. I would rather stay in a field office and be out on the street than working in the headquarters office. And out of the field office, you might have several investigators, and one might specialize in biologics. One might specialize in medical devices. You might have a couple of people on foods. And so you kind of distribute these programs around, plus the other investigative work that I mentioned, like consumer complaints, tampering cases, assisting local law enforcement officials and examining evidence and things like that. Pretty interesting, I must say. It was quite a learning experience.
Okay, so you're investigating things that normally one would expect the FDA to investigate, which tells us that at some levels the job is done appropriately, but somewhere something goes wrong.
Yes, and it didn't take me long to figure that out. As I said, just briefly, let me just touch on a couple of points which enabled me to make a decision about leaving the agency and deciding that the agency was in fact corrupted and that the corrupted FDA was actually just the tip of the iceberg from the entire government process in the United States. And let me just run by a couple of things real quick and then we can go on to our target subject. One was the Chilean grape crisis, which, as you know, well, maybe some folks don't know, but had come about through a phone call to the State Department regarding a shipment of fruit that was coming from South America that reportedly someone had injected cyanide into some bunches of grapes. At that point, and through a long, arduous process, the State Department and some other federal officials, including the FDA, used the FDA to halt all of the ships coming from South America, having all of the food or fruit removed, perishable items, by the way, hiring thousands of civilians to go onto the docks in locations like New York, Philadelphia, Charleston, Houston, Texas, San Francisco, and physically remove this fruit examine it, and return it, if it was still in any condition to be returned, back to the ship or wherever the loading dock happened to be. Well, eventually, after all this was over, and it was quite an indoctrination into the agency, I might add, it turned out that the money, or the money that was going to be income from the fruit, was going to be used to fund a coup d'etat in Chile, and the coup would have replaced the standard government they currently had with a government that was not U.S. friendly. And subsequently, all this took place to prevent that coup d'etat under the guise of cyanide being injected into grapes. Although they did find something. I imagine that it was probably harmless by the time it got to this country. Aside from that, several other things that, while I was working for the agency, didn't seem to fit well. I noticed the tryptophan fiasco. I noticed one day I walked into the office and there were two state agriculture investigators I wanted to pursue on federal labeling violations. And just to kind of give idea of a backdrop of how this agency was operating, when I walked in and I had this investigative report that was going to go to Washington, and I found my supervisor at the desk altering this report that I wrote. And including, he altered it to the point where some of the things that I had said and entered as evidence didn't ring true anymore. And I think that was to prevent the FDA from actually going after these two state investigators. Well, regardless of that, I made a decision right then and there that I was either going to follow the law or use the law to pursue justice. And that is what I did. And I did pursue these two individuals without the sanction or okay of the FDA up front. But it was part of the investigation into some adulterated products that we were looking into. And subsequently, it all worked out in the end, and these two people had left their agriculture agency, and everything turned out to be justice was served, I must say. And that brings us to aspartame.
Right.
We have a problem with aspartame. Now, if you remember back in, let me just run through some of the aspects of aspartame and let people know exactly what aspartame is, so everyone understands exactly what we're speaking of. Now, aspartame has been around for a while, and I'm sure most people have heard one way or the other regarding aspartame. And basically what we have is irrefutable proof that aspartame is toxic in nature and is extremely harmful to the brain and to all of the brain chemistries. Aspartame basically is a compound of three components. And these components are methanol, and methyl alcohol, as you know, is the type of alcohol that you drink that makes you go blind, aspartic acid, which is an amino acid, and phenylalanine, which is also an amino acid. Now, methanol, or wood alcohol, is a colorless, poisonous, flammable liquid used for making formaldehyde, acetic acid, gasoline additives, paint strippers, carburetor cleaners, and the poison can be inhaled from vapors, absorbed through the skin, and as you know, with aspartame, it can be ingested. The other aspect of aspartame is the phenylalanine. And phenylalanine, being an amino acid, most folks would say, being an amino acid, you would think that would be good for you. And that is normally true, except in certain cases.
That's usually the argument I hear. Well, it's it's a natural thing. Well,
that's true. But you have to understand that all of these chemicals are not in their natural state. Methanol is commonly found in a lot of fruits and vegetables, but the antidote or the direct opposite of methyl alcohol is ethyl alcohol, which is also found in these very same products. And so we have a balance, or they kind of cancel each other out, where in aspartame that doesn't hold true. What you have is pure methanol, and you do not have its antagonist riding alongside it, and so subsequently the person is ingesting pure methyl alcohol. The phenylalanine is what they call an excitotoxin. It's actually an isolate, and what they have done is they have removed the amino acid, and as you know, amino acids make up a protein chain, and they have removed these amino acids and isolated them and used them solely by themselves. And they did the same thing with aspartic acid. And it is because these amino acids were isolated is where they cause the problem. And they can easily cross the blood-brain barrier in those isolated stages. And this creates a very pathological excitation of nerve cells in the brain. It destroys nerve function. It attacks nerves. If I put it to you this way, the human body is controlled by the nervous system. The endocrine glands, like your pancreas, your insulin production, the bile, your liver, all of these functions, in effect, are created by or controlled by, indirectly and directly, by the nervous system. Now, you alter the nervous system, and you alter a lot of the endocrine components. You alter the insulin, which makes aspartame very bad for diabetics, and it exacerbates a number of other diseases. The methanol will break down into formic acid, which will actually cause you to see double, make you go blind, give you headaches. Some byproducts of the breakdown products of aspartame in the human body actually create brain tumors, and there has been a rise in brain tumors, and not just correlating to the rise in population, but rises in similar and serious types of carcinogenic or cancer-causing brain tumors that did not occur or exist in numbers that we see prior to the approval of NutraSweet or aspartame or Spoonful or Equal or whatever you want to call it, whatever name it comes on. So when we're talking about aspartame and it's in all these products, and we're thinking to ourselves, God, how did the FDA approve something that was toxic? This is the kicker. This is what stymies most people. Well, if the FDA approved it, it's got to be great. Well, I'll tell you something. The FDA has probably one of the worst track records in any type of regulatory agency. Half of the things that they approve of normally get recalled or they've had problems with them. And it just seems of lately, in the last 15, 20 years, the FDA has become not the public health enforcer that we think it is. It has a completely different job. And that job, it appears to be politically oriented in some way, shape, or form between big business, large corporations like Monsanto, G.D. Searle, Bristol-Myers, some of these other pharmaceutical, agricultural companies, and the government. And that's where we are right now. We're taking a look at the FDA as a government entity that has been corrupted, and to find out exactly how did aspartame get approved and wind up in our food. That's where we're going to go tonight.
Well, I'm looking at an article courtesy of Mark Gold, a researcher. And
I know Mark.
You know Mark. But right at the beginning here, he's saying that the FDA refused to approve aspartame until 1981, when the head was, or the FDA commissioner was fired, and Ronald Reagan put somebody else in there. And even though the people, the board of inquiry, did not want to approve it, he overruled them. Now, do you think that he was put in because possibly just of this particular issue, or do these guys just have a habit, perhaps, of bringing in people who are going to say yes at the right time? One doesn't have to wonder about the timing of this and the way things were pushed along right at that time.
Well, that's true. At the time of Reagan's appointment as President of the United States, right at that moment is when the pharmaceutical company, and in collusion with the talks with Monsanto, became a political entity. For the very first time in history, we have a pharmaceutical company that was run by politicians or former politicians and lawyers. And it's amazing. None of these people had real good technical expertise. What they had was the gift to manipulate the law and to pervert the scientific data for their own gain. Now, a lot of times we are bound by ethic laws within the FDA. As a federal investigator for the Food and Drug Administration at one time, it would have been in violation of the law for me to investigate a company that I had previously worked with in any shape, way, or form. this particular ethics violation does not seem to apply as you go up higher towards the Crystal Office. And by the Crystal Office, I mean the people in the suits that are in the Washington, D.C., Rockville, Maryland area that are making decisions regarding the investigations and what to do about the regulatory policies that they present to protect or supposedly to protect the American people or all people, because the FDA has such profound authority in these, or supposedly, I'm going to say alleged authority. I don't think they carry that authority anymore. I think people are finally beginning to see the light here. If we back up just a little bit, if we can,
sure.
Unless you wanted to go on to that particular area, the one of the fellows directly involved with that, who was the acting director of the Bureau of Foods at the time that he basically threw out the Bresler report, his name was Howard Roberts, and he was the acting director, and Roberts worked for the industry, as about 15 or 20 other individuals had at that time, and very unnoticed, got a job working with the Food and Drug Administration and actually had helped to promote the aspartame for G.D. Searle while working for the FDA. So he became very sympathetic towards the industry at that point. And so they immediately the conflict of interest kind of creeps up. But if you look and listen to some of the rhetoric regarding aspartame, you'll note that there were several key individuals working independently, even some people from Searle initially that had worked on aspartame had come forward and said, look, we have a problem with this product. Monkeys are dying. The tests are indicating that phenylalanine is toxic to the brain by itself. And this is not even in aspartic acid. Each of these components by themselves are toxic, and you've lumped three of very toxic materials together because it gave someone a sweet taste, and now we're going to market this as a sweetening agent. And this is like, you know, the diabetics were looking for certain things, and so they decided to politically manipulate a whole myriad of conditions in order to get this approved.
You know, this is really hard for your average person like myself to fathom that it could just be about money. I mean, if the scientists are saying this is toxic and it kills people, was there no thought of repercussions? Or, you know, I mean, it seems too big, you know, to just throw something like that on the market and overrun all these types of scientific opinions. This is really hard for your average person like myself to fathom that it could just be about money. I mean, if the scientist is toxic and it kills people, was there no thought of repercussions? Or, you know, I mean, it seems too big, you know, to just throw something like that on the market and overrun all these types of scientific opinions.
Well, I can give you some history on that. I have some things here that might be of interest to people listening. Now, the very first thing that the listeners need to understand is if you took the FDA as an agency and put it in the spoke of a wagon wheel or the hub of the wagon wheel and had all these spokes running out of it, and this is the way all of these things have played out, and it was a well-orchestrated an invasion of a country where the Army and the Air Force and the Marines, they all work together in a coordinated effort to attack on multiple fronts a way to get something approved. And the politics had a lot to do with it. There was a report in New York Times on May 15, 1999, and it was about drug trials hiding conflicts. And these were clinical trials for drugs, and the pressure that the doctors were under by the pharmaceutical firms to provide fraudulent clinical trials in order to get certain things approved. And that's just one little item right there. We have, now, if you take this and add to it, I have a newspaper article right in front of me from Ohio, United States. Al Gore is discussing the fact about campaign financing. And this is verbatim. This is what he says in this little article. He says, I personally am serious on campaign reform. This is just right after he accepted campaign money from Southeast Asia, by the way. So he's really, I guess they expect the general public to have very short memories. And he unveiled a sweeping plan to address, and this is what's in the article, the corrupting influence of big money in political life. And he called this a cancer on our democracy. And so he's telling people, and this is basically what he's saying, if people are reading these articles correctly, he is telling the public that there is a problem with PAC money, with soft money, with campaign money, and from big corporations and from these interest groups and things that are actually fronts from big corporations and from these interest groups and things that are actually fronts for some of the larger corporations. We have an article here that makes the Pennsylvania lawmakers exempt from the ethics law. They voted that in themselves. We have a problem with the EPA not dealing with pesticides correctly. They have said that, and this was on the MSNBC off the internet. It said that pesticide federal labeling laws were a matter of politics and not science, and so they're playing with our lives at that point. There are several things that have happened. The generic drug scandal was another thing. Just prior to my coming on board with the FDA, there were several people from a drug pharmaceutical company providing gifts and cash to scientists in Washington that were supposedly doing studies and evaluating some of the drugs from a particular pharmaceutical company. And so we have a deteriorated form of an agency that is exercising in an arbitrary and haphazard manner those things that it deems inappropriate to assist the large business and damn the general public. So that you have several things going on here. You have the FDA going after natural vitamins and herbs, which maybe one person didn't mix it right, got sick. They took tryptophan off the market, which was actually a good sleep aid. Tryptophan is also in milk, which we don't drink milk anymore, but if you heated milk, it releases the tryptophan. It would help you sleep a little bit better. But tryptophan, why they took it off the market, there was a bad batch that came from China that was adulterated, and so they saw the opportunity where we could just, a little bit at a time, we will erode the fact that we have access to and people can help themselves without having to go through the pharmaceutical companies, without having to go through the medical associations or their physicians, or circumvent the government altogether. And so there is an underlying motive under all of this, a common denominator like the threads of someone's sweater that holds it all together. And you have part of the arm, you have the neck, you have all these different pieces, but the common denominator, and you brought this up earlier, Anita, is money. It's greed. It's power. And they will definitely hurt the public because the politicians and the businesses are seeking to become more wealthy at the expense of the public health, to have more control over what they're doing without the oversight of committees and independent studies. And this is where this is all leading us. Now, if you look at that little scenario with the Food and Drug Administration, look at the entire process within the United States and our government, look at the problem we're having in Florida, and you can see that this underlying thread throughout a federal agency that is supposedly to protect people is actually doing the converse, because its priority is not public health. Its priority is in collusion with big business and politics, and that's what it boils off to. Now, we're going to prove that point tonight to everyone that's listening.
Okay, great.
Okay, now, we just read off a couple of things here. We talked about there are some problems with livers. If you remember tamoxifen, there was a problem with that, and people dying from cancer, and the FDA okayed that, and despite warnings. As a matter of fact, the FDA didn't even tell the people that there was any kind of a problem with some of these products. let me just, they backed off on USDA inspections. Here's that EPA thing. Pesticide rules shaped by politics, not by science. Here's an article from 1994. It says, FDA flaws peril the public, panel says. Chronic and pervasive shortcomings at the U.S. Food and Drug Administration leave the public health of Americans in serious danger. And it goes on to report some things. They were pretty nice about it. But in saying that the shortage of personnel, they were not able to meet their commitments. When I worked for the FDA, the entire United States Food and Drug Administration budget was equivalent to that of a medium-sized hospital, say around maybe 50 million. There was a lot.
Look at the power that is wielded by what the FDA says.
Oh, of course. Yes. I mean, they're supposed to be the prime agency on which all other agencies.
And other nations, you know, if the FDA approves it, it ends up being approved in Canada at some point, for example.
That's true.
There's a blind faith existing in so many nations that the FDA is almost God in its approvals. And I think that's starting to change, but not fast enough.
Well, it doesn't have its normal checks and balances like it used to anymore. Now, if we go back to aspartame, and we start to understand how G.D. Searle, the FDA, and politicians began to come together to make this happen. First of all, we have to discuss some of the testing, because back in the late 60s, aspartame was unheard of, but there was cyclamates. And the FDA banned the sweetener cyclamate in 1969, which wasn't too bad. It was known to cause some problems, or suspected problems. No one ever really proved that. Robert Schuplin, who was the acting director of FDA's Toxicological Service Center for FDA, was quoted as saying this, and this brings us back to some of the things I just mentioned. The decision of banning the sweetener cyclamate was more of a matter of politics than science. Now, what I wrote in a little hand note, a little question right next to that, and I wrote Searle politics, because now, in 1965, with the discovery of aspartame and its sweetness and a new market opening up, we have a company vying for position. And so what they did was, with some of the people that have this revolving door we talk about in FDA, people working for industry, they get a job with FDA, they'll go out and get a job with the USDA, they may even come over to Canada and work for your Ministry of Health. So we have a lot of these problems where people are coming from places where they have an allegiance to, regardless of their new position working for a public health agency. So we have a scientist, his name was John Olney, who found that glutamic acid, glutamate, like monosodium glutamate, aspartate or aspartic acid, which is an aspartame, cysteine, which is another amino acid, and cleaved as an isolate, excited the brain cells enough to cause brain cell death. The nerves, nerve cells in the brain kept triggering, and at a point where they died because they were overexcited, and we call that an excitotoxin. There were several studies that were performed on the glutamate, and somebody from the association confirmed that these products, these isolates, were in fact neurotoxic, and they were using infant mice at the time. So they were saying that, well, yes, in the infant mice, these things presented a problem. One of the things that, and this is really interesting when we're working with animals and doing tests on things that were going to be earmarked for human consumption, three things that are problematic. And these three have to do with the ingredients for aspartame, the methanol, the phenylalanine, the aspartic acid. One of these is that methanol is much more toxic in humans than it was in many of the animals that were tested for methanol toxicity using aspartame. Primates, it is about 10 times more toxic in human beings than it is in primates. Phenylalanine is 5 times more potential causing problems in humans than it is in some of these other animals. And humans are also much more susceptible to the excitotoxic effect of aspartic acid, which is the third component of aspartame. So we have all these problems coming. In 1972, we're just going to jump ahead a little bit, Adrian Gross, who was an FDA toxicologist, came upon irregularities in some of the tests that were submitted by G.D. Searle regarding some other drugs. At this point, the FDA was looking at Searle not only about the aspartame, but several things that they were making all of a sudden were not coming across as being performed. The tests weren't done very well at all. So we have a number of things that are getting the FDA's attention and should be saying, hey, look, we have a pharmaceutical company here turning out products that are basically all their tests are done in a manner that is not consistent with good methodology. There's a lot of problems with the way that they were being fed, the way they were being cleaned. Some of the animals died, then came back to life. So we're getting tests submitted to the FDA that were actually fraud. So now we have a pharmaceutical company that is attempting to get their products marketed, submitting false reports to the Food and Drug Administration. One thing that stands out real clear, and anyone that is that doesn't really understand the process of aspartame or may have worked for Monsanto will tell you that, well, aspartame is the most tested product in the world. Well, what they don't tell you is that more than half of the tests were single-dose test studies, and it is really not feasible to extrapolate the results of a single-dose test to the likely condition in which aspartame would be used in the public as an artificial sweetener. I mean, let's look at it. You come in from a hot day mowing the lawn, you're going to have two or three glasses of artificially sweetened Kool-Aid or a couple of Diet Cokes. Your kids are drinking, you know how kids are with pop, and so they're going to be drinking diet soda and all of the dietary foods out there, especially for the diabetics now. So now we have, and if we take this single dose testing that they did and kind of told everybody that they were testing this product aspartame for safety for so long, it is like saying, suppose we invented cigarettes today, and you give 20 people two packs of cigarettes a day for 6 weeks. Now after a 6 weeks period, now you smoke two packs of cigarettes a day for 6 weeks, nobody comes down with cancer. Now, would you say that was safe?
No, and that's not even a single dose.
That's basically the equivalent of what's happened. So these single dose studies, let's just talk about this for a second so people really understand what's happened with the FDA and why FDA did this. Chemistry, there was no information on chemistry, pharmacology, no protocols or curriculum vitae provided with clinical studies. No pharmacokinetic data, which is the has to do with the absorption, the excretion, the metabolism, and half-life, or the availability in the bloodstream of some of these food additive ingredients. Okay, now, the administration of aspartame. Let's go right to the Bureau of Foods. And Dr. Freeman's recommendation, this is the beginning. It's called nonfeasance by the Bureau of Foods. Nonfeasance means that we have a government agency that has chosen by will not to perform its job. A doctor said that was recommendation that the marketing of aspartame be contingent upon the proven clinical safety of aspartame. And the FDA Bureau of Foods rejected this recommendation. And that, anybody can check it. You look up the congressional record of 1985, small case A. Now, right then and there, we're thinking, why would a public health agency reject a recommendation to have a company prove safety of its product? That's key. That should be a red flag to almost everyone that comes in contact with this. Okay, now, on July 26, 1974, 15 months after Searle petitions for approval of of aspartame, Alexander Schmidt, who was the FDA commissioner at the time in 1974, approves aspartame for use in dry goods, and he gives it a 30-day period for public hearing and comment. Now, the FDA commissioner, Schmidt, is acting on a real strong, now, not just an endorsement. Here the key word is, out of the congressional record, is strong endorsement from the Bureau of Foods, which is now called CEFSAN, the Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition. Now, at this point, a lawyer, his name is Turner, he gets involved. Only the one of the original investigators and the one who found that aspartame caused holes in the brains of the animals that he was testing from the aspartic acid is joined in his protest, and promptly Schmidt begins to, they're making a lot of noise, so they rescind the approval for aspartame. So aspartame is approved initially for a 3-day period, and they decided that this is probably not a good idea. G.D. Searle, at this point, a task force is constructed by FDA Commissioner Schmidt's, he appoints the task force to look into 25 key studies at G.D. Searle, including aspartame, and this is some of the other drugs that they've had problems with. Richard Merrill, who is the FDA's general counsel, demanded in a letter that Sam Skinner, the U.S. attorney in Chicago, now this is the point where we're at now, so they have approved aspartame for a 30-day period, like a short break, now with the intent of approving it on a regular basis, and now a lot of this lawyers and some of these physicians had come forward and said, look, there's some serious flaws in the study. The Bresler report, Dr. Adrian Gross, the toxicologist for the FDA, has been ignored. Dr. Freeman worked for the FDA. So why is the Bureau of Foods, now called CEFSAN, acting in a manner that is irresponsible, actually criminal at this point in time? So this is, we have the U.S. attorney in Chicago opens up a grand jury investigation of G.D. Searle and three of its employees because of the fraudulent tests, the poor paperwork, the lies that were given to the FDA, and all of a sudden these inquiries begin to heat up. So we have the controversy within FDA is beginning to be a problem now, and it is beginning to collude with G.D. Searle. And so this is where the problem begins to develop. Now, we have people that used to work for industry, currently working for the FDA, and they've confused their priorities. So we have a lot of this stuff going on. Now, let's take one step further. We have a chief investigator who, at a Senate subcommittee hearing in front of Senator Edward Kennedy, who chaired this particular hearing, and this was a setup, by the way, the chief investigator for the Food and Drug Administration said that the hearings or the handling of the task force now investigating G.D. Searle, and now they also have a grand jury convening to indict G.D. Searle and three of its employees for fraud, okay, all of a sudden become politicized. The handling of the task force disclosures at the hearings by Senator Kennedy, Massachusetts, was politicized, and was one of the reasons why this particular investigator, his name was Brodsky, retired. He said, the main witnesses, Searle and executives and top FDA officials, uninvolved with the investigation, that's a key word, uninvolved, gave the wrong answers to the wrong questions. He says, the hearing, the Senate subcommittee hearing, wouldn't even let the experts answer the questions. And now you have the politics entering into it under the guise of an investigation, a Senate investigation, into corruption at G.D. Searle, which now covers over the FDA corruption or collusion. So now you have these three entities. You have the large business, the agro-pharmaceutical company, you have the Food and Drug Administration, which is a government regulatory enforcement agency, and then you have the U.S. government in politics. At this point, the three get connected. This is how aspartame winds up on your table. This is the connection right here.
Okay. Well, that's
it's very involved, and it's
hard to sort out.
Complex.
I mean, sorry. Where does a person start, or where do people start to fix things in this kind of a situation? I mean, who's held accountable in the long run? Who is responsible when this kind of corruption takes place? And I guess first of all, you have to get somebody, some kind of a government committee that isn't corrupted to take a stand, and how is that going to happen?
Well, this all this data was put together by a couple of hundred people that happened to collectively get together and share information. And this is not something one person could have done by themselves. Now we enter into a conspiracy phase. Now let me just run through this real quick, because I know we're going to be short on time. But this is what you were discussing earlier about Ronald Reagan and some of the people that were involved with that. Now this has we have blown over all of the bad tests. We have blown over all of the improprieties and all of the fraudulent reports that were sent to the FDA. Donald Rumsfeld, who was former member of the U.S. Congress and chief of staff under Gerald Ford, was hired as G.D. Searle's president in 1977. Okay? So this is 2 years after the Senate subcommittee hearing where the politics and the FDA, and they're all up on charges of collusion or malfeasance at best. Attorney James Turner, who was investigating and who prompted the U.S. attorney to go for an indictment against Searle, said that he was there to handle the legal problem of aspartame rather than the scientific safety of aspartame. So that switch over from the technical data to say that if I give you aspartame, you're going to have frequent headaches, you're going to have eyesight problems, and if you're diabetic, God help you, because you'll never be able to control your insulin intake, and you might get pains in your legs, or you might have all these problems are going to happen. But I'm not dealing with aspartame on a scientific, medical, historical presence or issue. Now I'm going to deal with aspartame on, hey, man, how can we get this through by dealing with the politicians? Whose string do we have to grease or pull to be able to affect regulatory policy to get FDA to approve aspartame, regardless of its toxicity? See what happens?
Yeah,
this is where it occurs.
I think you just put your finger on it, actually, that people check their conscience at the door when it comes to doing a job and getting ahead in life. And even though all of us really knows deep down inside that the right way to treat this world, not everybody wants to open their eyes about it.
Well, that's a fact. Rumsfeld now, who worked under Gerald Ford, he turns around and he hires a guy named John Robson. Robson becomes the executive vice president at G.D. Searle, and he was a former lawyer with Sidley and Austin, Searle's law firm. And he also served as chairman of the Civil Aeronautics Board, which was then connected to the Department of Transportation, another government agency. Okay? Robert Shapiro was hired as general counsel. I believe he's now a CEO, is now head of Searle's NutraSweet division. He had been Robson's special assistant at the Department of Transportation. William Greener Jr. is hired as chief spokesman, and he was a spokesman for Gerald Ford at the Ford White House when Ford was president. So now Rumsfeld is now on the board of directors of the Chicago Tribune, which recently wrote or had written a glowing article about the NutraSweet company. So now you have all of these players, and they all came from politics. Gerald Ford, some other government agencies where they're real tight with the politicians, the congressmen, and now you have all these things coming down. Now, the U.S. attorney that is investigating G.D. Searle's law firm, Sidley and Austin, request a meeting with the U.S. attorney that is going for the grand jury indictment. So they want to meet with Sam Skinner. He is the U.S. attorney. And one representative from the law firm representing Searle at that meeting also was on the board of directors of the Chicago Tribune. So this is in January of 77. On March 8th, 1977, in a confidential memo to aides, after Sam Skinner, the U.S. attorney, meets with the law firm of G.D. Searle, he, supposedly pushing for fraud indictment, now states that he has begun preliminary employment discussions with G.D. Searle's law firm. So now we have the U.S. attorney looking to get hired by the law firm representing the very people he was supposed to indict. So 2 months, 3 months later, April 13th, 1977, in a department, U.S. Justice Department memo urged that Sam Skinner to proceed with a grand jury investigation of G.D. Searle and points out that the statute of limitations now on prosecution would run out shortly if nothing is done. Well, at that point, Sam Skinner, the U.S. attorney, withdraws from the case and appoints the assistant U.S. attorney now who must go through with the grand jury. Now we got to start all over from scratch. And he pulled out just prior to the statute of limitations, the 7 years. Now Sam Skinner leaves his job and goes to work for G.D. Searle.
Ouch.
So this is how all this happens. And then it goes on and on. You have I'm going to jump ahead a little bit because of our time constraints, but now we have a play going on with the AMA, which backed the FDA. AMA just went along with the FDA. They really don't have, well, they've gained some things out of it because they get money in contributions and in clinical research and things like that from some of the major pharmaceutical companies. So we have some of that going on. And as you know, there have been several articles recently about influence on research from the firms that make the products. And they were influencing research and giving money to grants and things to the colleges and universities to influence favorable results for their products, which could be very dangerous to people like us and the general public. Now, if we jump ahead to Arthur Hull Hayes, he was the FDA commissioner. He was appointed by Ronald Reagan in April 1981. And shortly thereafter, three scientists in a five-member panel were sitting around discussing their concerns about aspartame, and they were worrisome that there was brain tumor data was really bad, and that they were keying in on some of these the real sensitive and serious issues brought to light by this G.D. Searle, multiple G.D. Searle investigations. Well, in July, aspartame was approved by Arthur Hull Hayes, and who overrules the Public Board of Inquiry, like you said, and he ignores the law under Section 409, which says that a food additive should not be approved if tests are inconclusive. And we also have something very interesting here, and this is for probably goes very well with the concert of the vote fraud problem we're having here in the United States. We have an amendment called the Delaney Act. And the Delaney Act was construed and created to prevent carcinogenic food additives from being in human food. We have a fellow named Michael Taylor who worked for G.D. Searle's law firm. He's a lawyer, and he goes to work for the FDA. While working for the FDA, he writes something called the De Minimis Clause. And what he does, he says, well, if the carcinogenic properties of a certain product are minimal, then it's okay to add it to the foods. And so the De Minimis Act gets the FDA off the hook legally for criminal intent, because now the FDA has since approved aspartame, which was in direct violation of its own laws. And what he does, he renders the Delaney Clause, which said no carcinogenic additives can be in human food, useless. So Michael Taylor is at FDA, he leaves FDA, goes back to work for Monsanto in some form, comes back, goes to work for USDA, and after that you know that bovine somatotropin hormone gets approved for injection into cows to increase milk production, and that kind of adulterates the milk for most of the population, and then leaves there and goes back to work for the law firm. Michael Taylor is cousins to Al Gore, which is interesting.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Keep it in the family.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to be corrupt, just keep it in the family. So we have all these things going on. Arthur Hull Hayes, he approves his decision in the face of Searle to threatening the FDA with regulatory delays. Well, actually, it was Searle that created this problem for itself to begin with. And so they said, well, let's do one more study. Hopefully, it'll be an independent study. And they send this stuff off to Japan to have it tested. Well, the company that tests it is Ayamoto, a Japanese company, which is one of the original manufacturers of aspartame on the Asian continent.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so that's how that happens. When we have Michael Taylor, Now, let me just run down a little list here of who some of these people were and where they went. This is, will probably give people a revolving door scenario. By the way, Arthur Hull Hayes almost gets indicted himself right after he approves aspartame because he was receiving gifts and other types of gratuities from Monsanto and G.D. Searle at the time. So he ends up leaving the agency and goes to New York and starts working for a public relations firm, which is the public relations firm for G.D. Searle.
You know, what really gets me is that there are a lot of people in the world, a lot of scientists, politicians. How come the same names keep coming up over and over again? Yeah, that's amazing. You know, and don't worry about the time too much. If we run over, I'd rather not cut you off if you have more to say.
Well, there's a little bit left here, which I think would kind of like put the cap on all this. All these people should be in federal prison. They should all be in Leavenworth breaking Big Rocks. Let me just give you a little idea of what's going on here. Michael Taylor, FDA lawyer who represented the FDA Bureau of Foods again, at some of the meetings that they had. Sherwin Gardner, who was the deputy FDA commissioner in 79, who signed the initial approval for aspartame's use in dry foods back in 74. And that this was later blocked by James Turner, who was the lawyer acting in concert with Dr. Olney. December 79, Gardner leaves FDA and becomes vice president of the Grocery Manufacturers of America. And isn't that interesting? Because now he's involved with all the products, the grocery products that contain aspartame. Stuart Pape was the Health and Human Services Chief Counsel for Foods in October, and he winds up leaving the FDA and going to work for the Health and Human Services Chief Counsel for Foods in October, and he winds up leaving the FDA and going to work for the law firm of Patton, Boggs, and Blow. BLOW, this law firm provided counsel to the National Soft Drink Association. Yeah, okay, that which originally, by the way, did not want aspartame approved for soft drinks, and at some point got paid off or something occurred where the decision-making process and some of the political appointees got into the decision-making process at the National Soft Drink Association and then reversed their original decision and allowed aspartame to go ahead and be approved in soft drinks. And so we have that. Then we have the Diabetic Association and the American Dietetic Association, two agencies, nonprofit agencies that, well, the Diabetic Association, as you know, is supposedly or allegedly looking into cures for diabetics. And the American Dietetic Association is looking into basically food safety in general and kind of dietary things. Now, both of these agencies, and there's one clear underlying denominator, and we go back to the money again, and I hate to say this, but people are greedy. The point being is there's no money in curing anything. There's a lot of money in treating everything. So we're going to just use that little scenario right there. Now, there are pictures, and it's on the Internet, where the American Diabetic Association is accepting a $100,000 check from Monsanto. Monsanto writes a lot of their literature. Now, how does this happen? We don't know. But there's collusion. They give a lot of money to the American Diabetic Association for research. But the research, now basically what Monsanto has done, and normally this is how it works, when you go out and you give a grant to someone to do research, suppose you and I were going to get together on a product that you created, and I said, okay, why don't we give this over to the one of the colleges and universities next to the house, and we'll provide some grant money and let them research it and let us know if the product is safe. Monsanto, historically, when it came down to research of aspartame, and rather than giving a grant to the research facility or university, and this is a very important point, what Monsanto did was they created contracts with the university or researcher. Now, as opposed to a grant where the research is usually independent of the person who gave the money and they're free to kind of do what they need to do, under a contract, the contractor, being Monsanto, provides stipulations on how, what, where, and when. And so basically has the opportunity to guide the outcome of the research under the contract.
Or pull the plug if they don't like the direction it's going.
Oh, that's also happened. That's also happened. So we have Susan Schiffman, who was named as a head of Searle-funded Duke University Medical School to study NutraSweet's link to headaches. Susan Schiffman works for Duke Medical Center, and she, now this is, I had to read this twice because it really drove me crazy. She is currently here in North Carolina, who was a former General Foods and Searle consultant, works for Duke University. And they tagged her, provided Duke with a lot of money, and said, Susan, do us a favor. Check out and see if aspartame causes headaches in people. Be careful on how you do this research. You
right.
used to work for us, remember?
Yeah, yes. there's no conflict there, I guess.
Oh, not at all. Okay. So let's go on a little bit further, and we're going to come to a problem. Well, Arizona really stepped up to the block here and said, look, you know, we want to be able to look into the history of aspartame. Senator Metzenbaum, Orrin Hatch, was instrumental in allowing Monsanto to have basically carte blanche in doing this kind of stuff. So now we're going to go into the political agenda of things, and just to kind of show you how things happened. In 1984, with all these delays that were going on, okay, there is a senator from Alabama in October of 82. His name was Senator Howell Heflin. And he proposes at this point in time, and this is after Dr. Wertmann is engrossed in the Arizona Dietetic Association that is suing Monsanto for the problem over aspartame safety. Now, Senator Heflin from Alabama brings to the floor of the U.S. Senate in Congress an obscure amendment that actually alters the law of the U.S. patent extension. And what he does is he offers a new amendment to the patent extension process, and he says, look, a company that is involved with regulatory wrangling over a period of time ought to have their patent extended because they have not been able to market the product. See, but Searle was the one that they placed themselves in that situation anyway. And now what they've done is they turned around and they blamed the FDA. They're pitting one against the other. They blame the FDA for all the regulatory problems that they're having, and then they go to this senator and they said, look, you know, why don't we do this amendment thing and we can get a patent extension on our product? Not to mention that we create this ourselves. So that's what happens. So he makes a move in the U.S. Senate that only affects one company and one product, aspartame. Without even mentioning the word aspartame, which is sold under NutraSweet, the Senate passes this amendment, and it gets attached to what is called the Orphan Drug Act, and it basically extends G.D. Searle's domestic monopoly on aspartame sales for another 5 years, 10 months and 17 days, to be exact. Now, we have Senator Orrin Hatch from Utah saying, well, we think it's an excellent amendment, and there's a five-minute discussion on this whole thing, and they go ahead and approve everything. And later it was all cinched, another $3.5 to $4 billion in revenues goes to the Chicago-based G.D. Searle NutraSweet company. You talk about greed, that's, people get killed over less than that. $3.5 to $4 billion in revenues just got guaranteed to G.D. Searle NutraSweet company because of this amendment that only affected the one company and the one product. That's what happened.
You know, it's interesting when you bring up that patent business because a lot of people put forth patents for example, machinery that don't get built right away. And where is the payback for them? If you're going to make an exception over something like aspartame, then, you know, it's just a matter of time before a lot of people are beating down the door for the same reason. And it puts into question definitely the whole process. Well, obviously, there's a lot of things put in the process into question here. But what you say about one company being represented by a move like that pretty much spells out the plight against pharmaceuticals right now. I understand that Monsanto's actually changed their name in order to perhaps escape some of the negative press they've had lately. Pharmacia?
Right. They're looking for a couple of other capital investors. They may even break up the company. So we have a lot of these problems going on.
Of course, that just removes the surface attention they get, but the people who are responsible are the ones. I mean, as much as we'd like to say Monsanto, it's really not Monsanto. It's individuals. It's just like it's not the FDA, because people like you are doing your job. But it's the way the things have been set up that allows corruption to happen, and the lack of watchdogging, I guess, on these government industries and facilities.
Well, what we have here is right after this, you're absolutely correct, and this actually just corrupts this common thread that we discussed earlier in the program. This common denominator that runs through all of this is becoming much more evident now. I'm sure the listeners are sitting there going, my God, this all happens behind back closed doors. This is closed door politics. These people go in a room, no one knows what's going on, they make a deal, they walk out. I mean, if you know how lawyers go, you know, that your defense lawyer and the prosecutor sit in a little closed room, and without your knowledge, they'll make a case or discuss it and come out, and you know, next thing you know, you got a plea bargain going. When you're innocent. So this is how this occurs. And it occurs, and we find out ex posto facto, after the fact, and there's not a whole lot that you can be to do about it because, well, now the Internet is probably the godsend because information can travel a lot faster. But Heflin, after this bill was introduced into the Senate, received contributions totaling, and this is minimal, is what we know of, $9,000 from Searle's top officers. And its political action committee. Hatch received about $3,000 just to say, okay, that was a good deal, 5 minutes worth of work. Heflin defended his sponsorship saying, well, actually he had a son or a brother-in-law that worked for Searle, not to mention that. But critics now, and me being one, know that the patent should never have been extended since it was Searle's flawed studies and poor study designs themselves, which delayed the questionable approval by FDA to begin with. And then we have Dr. Woodrow Monti in Arizona heating up with his problem there, trying to get aspartame in the state of Arizona to actually ban aspartame from the state of Arizona. Now, so you have all of these politicians working for G.D. Searle. You have Rumsfeld, who worked for Gerald Ford. You have several other key players, including Shapiro, who work for government agencies. Now these people are actually hitting up for their little favors, their little paybacks, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, this is sort of like the old boy network and somewhere in Jackson, Mississippi, where you find this working on a very large scale in collusion with all these items that we mentioned tonight. And so where we are right now is the fact that the FDA is considering putting unlabeled aspartame into yogurt. And it is also probably in hundreds of other products. And, you know, you call up a manufacturer and say, is there aspartame? You know, you don't know. And sometimes they don't even know. They get their additives in. If it's not labeled on the bag, it goes into the food and nobody knows any different. And for people who have phenylketonuria, that could be very dangerous. And for the rest of us that just get sick from the toxic elements of aspartame is criminal. And everyone connected with this should be in prison by now.
And I guess
this is not an accident. This all happened by design.
And
same
I guess
way Kennedy
yeah.
was killed.
Like you say, when it is criminal, people are liable. We look to our diabetic associations to protect people. So I guess the next question is, what's happening in the way of lawsuits? Are there class action lawsuits being started? Are people starting to get together? And are we going to see something that makes the tobacco farce pale?
Oh, well, this definitely pales. Now, here you have a group of individuals in the tobacco. On initial Senate subcommittee hearings, all five of these CEOs stood up and said, no, tobacco's fine. We didn't do anything to it. I mean, they just lie. And the lies become more blatant. And yes, this will pale to it because of the amount, well, even tobacco was large quantities of cash flowing back and forth to special interests. And it's just, what we need is for the people to solidify and demand from the U.S. government that this be removed from the marketplace once and for all. And as you know, stevia, and for all the listeners out there, stevia, my father is a diabetic, and I had to get him off the aspartame. And I have gotten him to use stevia, which is a wonderful alternative sweetener. It grows wild in South America. It can grow in the United States. You have people growing it in Canada. It is the short growing season, but it's really a wonderful little plant in that it is nutritious. It has basically zero calories to it, or just very few calories to it. It actually prevents dental caries, so it doesn't even give you cavities or toothache like a normal sugar would. And it's great. The only thing it doesn't do is it doesn't brown when you put it in a regular convection oven. But aside from that, the properties in the alternative sweetener, which is natural, stevia, is a great alternative. Now, the FDA has gone way, way out of its way to prevent stevia's approval. And I was involved with some of the initial goings-on in getting stevia from the pharmaceutical company down near the Paraguayan border in southern Brazil back into the United States somehow, and the best way to approach approval. Apparently, I wanted to get it approved as a food, which is a little bit easier, and the people that were in the United States as fronts or go-betweens between the pharmacopoeia company, stevia pharmaceutical, and the United States wanted to do it as a food additive. So I backed out of the deal. I said, you're opening a can of worms with that. I said, if you get it done as a food, the Indians have been using this stuff for 500 years. There's no adverse effects. And you'll notice that after this occurred, some of the agencies would start providing misinformation. They will misinform people on purpose, saying that stevia will do this or do this. And it will be the same thing as cyclamates and saccharin. These were political decisions to allow for the market growth of aspartame in particular. And so they're still attempting to do that. I think once NutraSweet goes by the wayside and sales decline to the point where it won't be able to support itself, at that point, when people start making demands of the government, because we're the ones that are paying these people to look out for us, and here they are stabbing us in the back. And so we need to go into action and do something, write some letters, make some phone calls, call people up, tell your neighbors, discuss it at hearings, wherever you are. We need people to get together and put the coffee cup down just for 5 minutes and write a short letter or tap into an email address and let their appointed elected officials or the criminal government know that we are not going to tolerate this kind of governance anymore. We want some changes, and we want them now. And that's basically the way to approach this. We're done pussyfooting around the FDA. And poor Betty Martini, who is like an angel on earth, has been at this for 15 or more years. And the FDA has basically, now here's a government agency with all of this clinical data, all of this independent research, and it's still telling people, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to listen to you. Who the heck are you? And so now they're still in collusion, probably even closer to the industry than they ever were. And they have, all of these government agencies have turned a deaf ear to the people. And so our collective will to take care of ourselves now is basically in jeopardy, and that really robs us of some freedom. So this all gets kind of tied in with some of that stuff, and now if you take away vote fraud and you take away our vote for a republic, and then you really got the icing on the cake, and now we're back to square one. So now we're all slaves again, and we have to get out from being an indentured servant. But anyway, it's kind of how it all comes full circle with aspartame and a government agency that's corrupt, and then you see that there are many, the government itself is corrupt that allows this activity to take place, and then we have collusion with the politicians and large corporations, and it just comes full circle. And your money, the greed and the power is the common thread that runs through all of this. For whatever reason, they've lost their conscience. They don't look in the mirror. I don't know what they're seeing. I would not be able to live with myself personally. I think that's a travesty. And all these people are criminals. And they should be all indicted for murder, because many people have died over these products. And I'm sure it's not just aspartame, but since that is the subject tonight, aspartame is a toxic substance. And it has even probably there is evidence that this is on the Department of Defense's chemical warfare agents. The Nazis were using phenylalanine as an agent for chemical warfare back in World War II. The end of World War I, they started experimenting with this. And this gets all tied in together. This is one huge problem. And it's hard to separate out, but we're just discussing the FDA and their criminal act right now. So this is what we're up against. And I basically don't see any changes unless you have to squeak it from the top. You know, you got a headache, you're not going to go to the big toe. And, of course, I'm sure you'd probably get massaged there. But this is where I'm coming from as a federal investigator that was very much interested in protecting the public health. And you got a lot of young people. Now, I was a little bit more seasoned being a police officer and being a paramedic prior to my induction into federal service. So I was able to see above and beyond what the orders were. But they wanted college kids right out of college who had their first job, worked for FDA, did anything that they were told, and without question. And when I started making some questions and doing things on my own and making sure that justice was served, and two of the other seasoned investigators in our office, we all basically left around the same time. One guy went to Washington. One girl left. Her name was Gail Train, and she did my background information. She ended up going to Bristol-Myers in Puerto Rico, and me. And we were the three top investigators that were actually questioning the FDA's policies, their ethics. At that time, I filed charges against my supervisor for altering records and making bad investigative judgments. And while I was leveling ethics charges against him, the entire FDA district was under investigation by the Inspector General's office. So this is just one little problem here, and it just permeates like a bad cancer, as Al Gore put it. It is a cancer. And so now we're faced with this, having to correct this, and it's going to be a lot more painful. Hopefully, when all is said and done and we get control of our public health and our government and our freedoms to make decisions for ourselves, that we don't fall back into complacency again, and we keep vigilant and stay on top of things the way that we're supposed to as the will of the people, the collective group known as the general public. We're getting the shaft, and the criminals are running the country.
Yeah, well, I think I'm kind of optimistic about the direction we're going there, because, as you said, even with this issue being the way it is now, with the information that's come together, that took the work of a lot of people. And when people get motivated enough to do that kind of legwork without profit in it for themselves, then you know you've got what you call a groundswell movement. And this has been happening in a lot of areas, and we're seeing it okay with aspartame, but that's just, as you mentioned, it's one symptomatic aspect of the whole thing. I mean, you look over at Europe right now and the movements being made towards getting rid of genetically modified foods, and all I can do is hope and pray that the message catches on a little stronger over here. We just don't know what we're being fed anymore. And it's fine if people want to take chances with their bodies if they're informed. But when they're not informed and when they're misled, personally, I think that anybody who uses something in a product when they aren't satisfied of its safety is just as liable. The soft drink companies who bowed under pressure, you know, it's not like the tobacco companies, all they sold was cigarettes. Aspartame is being put in so many foods, and each one of those manufacturers is somehow liable for not being responsible for what's in that product, for taking shortcuts.
Well, that's true. And plus, in addition to all of that, we have the manipulation of the media, which basically the tobacco companies really didn't have. But we had board members on the Chicago Tribune. We have corporations now that have monopolies over some of the major media like CBS, ABC, owned by General Electric. Fox, thank God, is owned by someone from, I believe, from Australia, and he's not as corrupted as some of the others. But you have people from G.D. Searle on the board of the Chicago Tribune, and who knows what other newspaper they're on, the Gannett newspaper, the New York Times, or San Francisco Sun, or whatever. You have a very grave, very anti-public type of influence that is very pro-corruption and instilled into the media process across the nation. And this actually is dangerous, because without that information, if it wasn't for shows like Black Op Radio and some of the other free, really free media catalysts out there, people would not be getting the information they would need to make good decisions for themselves, for their lives. And this is what's very important, is that we maintain shows like yours. So anybody that has the opportunity to make a contribution to the radio show, please, I guess, do so. I'm very happy that you're here, because it is basically the information that you provide in your programming that allows people to say, hey, you know what, this is not what we're getting on CBS or CNN. Because I turned files over probably 5 or 6 inches thick on some of the things that were wrong with the FDA, including the bovine growth hormone back in 1993. And I said, look, y'all need to take a look at this stuff. I said, something is seriously wrong with the government agency that is supposedly to protect the public health, and they're not. And CNN took this material from me, and I never saw it again. Thank God I had copies. Because one of those copies was a note from my supervisor, who altered my records. And what he did this three times, until basically he had it watered down so much that the FDA was basically opting for no action at all. And on the top of the very last change he made, he attached a little note that I have saved all this time, and it said, Arthur, please destroy all previous copies. Signed, well, I call him Hairbag Bob, but that was his name. And that's what exactly he, and I did not do that. What I ended up doing is I took this out, and I photocopied it in my own time, and I said, well, if anything happens, then this is going to be the proof that things went wrong somewhere within the FDA. And it doesn't take very many people. It takes a couple of decision makers. There definitely has to be a conspiracy. They will definitely collude, and you can definitely bet your bottom dollar that it will have something to do with a senator or a congressman affecting regulatory policy through influence money, and a large corporation that will promise these pinheads a job when they get done with whatever service they're doing at that particular time. And that's how it has all worked. This is the machinery that's driving this. And for anybody listening, all you have to do is just take what I said, and you can apply this to almost any agency, and you will basically find the names will change, and the scenarios may be altered a little bit, but basically this is consistent throughout. This is a very corrupt type of a scenario that we're painting here. Very dismal, I might add. But the people have the power, and that power is in the pen. I hate to see anything go over to, physical, but I think that while we still have this power, we have the powers in numbers, and we have the opportunity to make some changes. We need to do that now. And I'm kind of out of breath.
Well, you used the breath you had very well. And let's say, I do agree 100% with what you say as far as, just the status quo even. I think that we're heading for some major changes as far as awareness, and I don't think too many people could have foreseen what the internet would do. We think it's a privilege for ourselves to be able to do a show like this, and I mean, I have to say from my point of view that I would encourage anybody to just pick up the medium and start doing it, because this is really the future of communication, one-on-one with people dropping in when they want to hear and listening to the person themselves and not listening to a 10-second soundbite. If you're lucky, you get a 10-second soundbite in the mainstream media, and of course all the important information gets gets obliterated. Now, this is a very big complaint with a lot of people who have important information to come forward. And they get, you know, they put the energy into to doing their spots, and then the most irrelevant section of the conversation is aired and often makes them look foolish. And then they're labeled conspiracy theorists. And unfortunately, conspiracy is in nature. It's not, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to see how money works and how money moves. It's not that a whole bunch of people are getting together and saying, well, let's just give them the shaft. That's what comes natural to certain types of mentalities. And it's not that people have to collude. It just happens. Nobody has to set the stage for it. The stage is already set.
Yeah, I think the opportunity to do that is built in inherently into the system itself. I would like to just let the listeners on your show in on a couple of things that maybe they can do to assist in gaining better insight into what goes on. One, when you see articles, look at them very closely, and a lot of times it's not what they're saying. Watch what's printed, how it's said, what they're not saying. Cut out the articles. Save things that you might think that would be suspicious or have to do with foods. Watch who's doing the saying, and you'll see these names pop up in other places. What they really hope for is that the general public has a very short memory. So what they say last week, oh, well, as in Al Gore's case, you know, he can do flip-flops, and one day he's growing tobacco, and the next day he's not for it, and then he's passing out tobacco for people that voted for him. So we have this going on. And if you're really tuned in to be looking for that, basically this will help you become a lot more well-informed when you start to develop a real sharp, discerning eye on the type of news that you're receiving. Look how bland some of the major media, like ABC, or if you're watching CNN or something like that, look how bland this really the news is. And they'll report really stupid things over and over and over and over again and let all the real important issues, you know, fall by the wayside. The other thing I'd like to mention quickly is to take a test. If you're not feeling good at drinking aspartame, ladies and gentlemen, listen to me very carefully. Get off the aspartame. Be very, very careful on the ingredient labels that you are looking at more of a natural or a health food product. And in about 6 weeks, just to see if your symptoms subsided. And even though I was investigating aspartame, my firsthand experience with this was a little girl who used to visit my house in Atlanta, and she was an asthmatic. And one day I saw her, and she was bringing over Diet Coke all the time. And I called her mother up, and her mother said, yes, she has about five asthma attacks every week in a 7-day period, some more serious than others. And she also has these temper tantrums. And I said, well, I noticed that she's drinking diet soda. I said, let's do a test. I said, keep her off the aspartame. Monitor her very closely. Get her to drink ginger ale or one of these other non-cola products. And let me know in a couple of weeks what happens. Well, being only down the street, we talk frequently, and at the end of a 5-week period, basically her asthmatic attacks ceased. She had one the last 2 weeks, so week 4 and 5, she only had one attack, and her temper tantrums disappeared. And the reason for this is that aspartame, the phenylalanine, actually lowers the serotonin level in the brain. It affects other chemistry, including this type of chemistry. And this will greatly aggravate rage. It affects the limbic system of the human brain. And so we have road rage. And these kinds of things are not always from steroid abuse, but rather from the toxic effects, the neurotoxicity of aspartame itself. And when you lower some of these things like serotonin and some of the other brain agents, you have a propensity or the potential for seizures. If you're close to the threshold and you may not never experience a seizure until you drink aspartame, you may be argumentative, you just may not be yourself, you may not even be able to pinpoint it. But I will tell you that if you get off the aspartame, you will see these symptoms disappear over a period of time. That is a true clinical trial. And then if you take notes and you're real keen on knowing who you are and how you feel, that's one way to really ascertain, say, you know what? We heard this show on Black Ops Radio the other day, and this is absolutely correct. And everyone that has gotten off of aspartame for the most part, all of their symptoms disappear. And for, if you've been doing it for years and years and years, then the chances are that, you might have some irreversible damage, but chances are you will actually reduce drastically the symptoms posed by the toxic effects of the methanol, the phenylalanine, and the aspartic acid. And so I wish everybody well, and hope that people stay healthy, and they have an opportunity to look at the media and the news and really take it apart, play devil's advocate with this stuff, and find out exactly, and go for the truth, go for the jugular. You'll have to stay alive these days.
Well, we're off to a good start having people like you on our program. We had Betty Martini on, and she was wonderful, very, very fluid in what she had to say as well. And, you know, how can people really argue with the facts when you put them forward, when you show the connections and the buy-offs and the job favors, et cetera, it's not that hard to trace. All people have to do is just wake up and say, oh, well, that's what happened. Okay, well, let's move on and fix the problem. And that said, it has been really wonderful having you here.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for being the voice and the medium for people to have really good information. You are definitely an excellent public service.
Thank you very much. It's great that you feel that way, and we're going to keep on doing what we're doing. So we'll leave it at that for now, and we'll be in touch with everybody here. And this is Black Op Radio number 24. This has been Arthur Evangelista. Thank you very much, Arthur.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure.
Okay. Well, good night, everybody. And we'll see you again.
Good night.
Bye.
Broadcasting weekly from the Fiasco Brothers Recording Studio in Vancouver, Canada. You're listening to the Fiasco Brothers Radio Network.